I'm Jeff Cohen. If you're an avid listener to Saturday to Shabbos, then you know we typically feature people who have made their journey to Jewish observance. Today's episode will be a little different. Aaron Sandler grew up religious, but then made a career choice that strained his ability to lead an observant life. Let's find out how Aaron managed to stay on the path despite his environment. It wasn't always easy, but it's an important lesson about what it takes to maintain your commitment to religion. Aaron, welcome to Saturday to Shabbos.
Hi, Jeff. Thanks.
Let's start at the beginning, not even with your story, but tell us a little bit about your parents and where they were holding religiously, where they're from, how they met, so we get some context about where your story begins.
Well, my father was raised conservative. My mom and my dad are both from the Detroit area, which is where I was born and raised. And my mom ended up converting to Judaism in college. That's where my parents met. My dad was an attorney, and my mom was a teacher and an HR executive. When I was a young kid, they made the decision to become more observant and become Orthodox.
Well, so if I'm going back to thinking about your parents meeting at the time, your father's conservative, your mother's not Jewish, they meet and get married, or she converts before they get married?
I'm a little fuzzy on that timeline, but she had converted prior to the wedding. That much I know, but I don't really know the exact timeline there.
Do you know if she had to go through a conservative or Orthodox conversion? I'm like thinking about your story in terms of she might have first done a conservative one and then they decide to become more religious. There might have to be like a second conversion to make it, quote, official.
Yes, there was. There was definitely a second one.
Wow. Okay. So your story starts in Detroit. That's where you say you were born and raised. At the time that you come into the picture, where are your parents holding?
They were mostly on the path to Orthodoxy. My mom had already gone through the Orthodox conversion prior to my birth. So I didn't have to worry about any of the issues that could come with that. By the time I was born, they were really new to Orthodoxy, but definitely were Orthodox.
And did they have to move? I'm thinking that before they were Orthodox, it's not always critical to be like walking distance to a shul, but then when you want to be part of a community and all that, did they make a move to make you part of the whole thing?
No, they didn't have to, because my parents ended up moving back to my dad's hometown of Oak Park, which is where the conservative community was, but also intermixed with the Orthodox community. As they started to do more, they felt more of a connection to it. And my dad, being an attorney, he loved the law, and halacha is nothing but that. And so he would study Gemara all the time, all kinds of sfarim that framed halacha from like a civil law perspective.
So now when people ask you, do you say, hi, I'm Aaron Sandler, I'm from birth? Or what's the way you sort of pitch your own story?
I'm born and raised from. I have no memories of doing anything that wasn't, so that's who I am.
So one of the things I found in interviewing people who were raised secular and then came to religion as an adult is that they'll say, I kind of like that I got to pick this. Like, I came to it on my own. I took an interest in it. I decided to go deeper into religion. Now, they may be raising their family religious as the next step, and so they realize that their kids are not having the same choice. Although they know at some point as their kids are going to grow up, they're going to have to come into adulthood and make a decision that they're really all in on this. Do you remember any of your feelings about the fact that you were being raised religious, whether you view that as a good thing, a bad thing, you didn't have that choice? Like, when did you start grappling with that?
I'd say probably when I got to high school, because in elementary school, I was in Jewish day school. I was pretty much insulated in the Jewish community. I never really had too much exposure outside of it. And then when I went to high school, I switched to public school. Even though it was a very Jewish school still, like we were closed on the Yom Tovim, it was still very obvious that I wasn't the normal type of kid there. All the football games were on Friday nights. All the dances were on Friday nights. And, you know, everyone talked about whether, you know, on Friday afternoons, everyone's like, oh, where are we going to go tonight? And I'm like, I'm going to synagogue and then to eat a dinner. It's really good to start opening my eyes and like to like not be able to walk in the cafeteria and just get food. Whereas at my previous school, I could. Then really throughout high school, it kind of led to the spiritual crisis. By the end of high school, I didn't know where I was, what I wanted to do. And it was my next stage in life that brought everything back into focus.
So before we go into that next stage, I just want to back up a little bit. You were in a Jewish day school from, say, preschool through eighth grade. So you clearly got the foundation in davening and all the holidays and everything like that. But then for high school, is it that there wasn't a day school high school, or was other reasons why you then switched to public school?
There were other reasons, mostly due with issues that my parents had with the administration of the school and certain policies that were being enforced, some that weren't being enforced, depending on who the kids involved were. Or actually, more correctly, who their parents were. And so it created a lot of just bad feelings with my parents. At that time, there were only two Orthodox high schools in Detroit. There was the modern Orthodox one, Akiva, and then there was the Yeshivish one, by Yehuda. And I was definitely not that track. So my parents thought it'd be better for me to go to public school and then learn with the rabbi during the week to make up for the Jewish education side. And so that was what my parents chose.
I wonder if they underestimated what it would mean for you to be in this environment where you would be exposed to, yes, a lot of Jewish kids, but those that are living like a very different way than you are, and how that compared to, okay, there were things they didn't like about the day school for high school, but there would have been some pros there also. Do you reflect on that decision and how that might have changed things for you?
My life would definitely have turned out a lot different had I gone to the Yeshivish high school or stuck it out at my previous school. My father, growing up conservative, went to public school. He wasn't Shomer Shabbos, Shomer Kosher Street then, so he never really felt separated like an Orthodox Jew does at school. And so I don't think he truly comprehended what that experience would be like.
Now, you said by the time high school was ending, it kind of left you in a place of a lack of clarity about what your connection was going to be to Orthodox Judaism. So clearly the fact that you're in an environment where not everybody is following the same laws that you are would play into that. Was anything else going on? Like, why were you feeling that way specifically?
I think it was just as a kid going through that self-discovery and what I was going to be doing next and where I saw myself in, you know, 4 years, 10 years, whatever. And, you know, I had a lot of questions about Judaism, and the rabbi that I was learning with, I only met a couple times a week. It wasn't like a full classroom setting where a question pops into your head and you can ask it. So I really didn't have an outlet to have those questions resolved. I talked to my parents and my shul rabbi, but again, when you're at shul, the rabbi has a million things on his mind going on. It's not really the best place for those types of discussions. So it was just trying to figure everything out. And when it didn't make sense, being a 18-year-old kid, things that seemed like the end of the world when they really weren't, and all that kind of stuff. So there were a lot of factors, small ones, that led into that big kind of just overall questioning of life.
So before we get to the ultimate decision you made after high school for the next chapter, what were some of the things you were considering? Because I'm hearing clearly you're trying to make sense of the world, trying to figure out your place in it. What were the other things on the table that you were thinking of career-wise, school-wise, in terms of religion?
Well, I mean, obviously school was the big thing that everyone's always thinking about when you get to be in 11th grade. But in a high school, I was kind of burned out from just school. I had been 12 years of it. The issues I had at the Jewish school and then the difficulties I had at the public school really drained me out. So I wasn't too keen on going right back to school. So I was considering gap years. I was considering traveling. I was considering going to Israel. I was considering all kinds of different stuff. And ultimately, my next chapter is what I decided on for a variety of reasons, which all those other things ironically played a role in me ending up where I did.
And those choices you were considering when you say a gap year or traveling, in your mind, were you planning to be an Orthodox Jew in all those choices, or was part, so you, that you were committed to, that you wanted to stay that way?
Well, it wasn't so much a commitment as it was just who I was. Like, I hadn't made a decision to stop being it. I'm an Orthodox Jew. It's who I am. Would that have held up in the face of different challenges? I can't speak to that because it never happened. Yeah, so at that point, that's just how I saw myself.
And so the decision you ultimately make after high school is, drumroll please, tell our audience.
I enlisted in the U.S. Navy, and I spent 7 years there.
I'm picturing someone making a decision to go into the Navy, and you've also just said you're in it as an Orthodox Jew. You have to have spent some time thinking, I'm going to a place that maybe is not the ideal setup for this type of life. So were you asking questions? What kind of research were you doing to see how hard or easy it would be to be an Orthodox Jew in the Navy?
Well, that really came down to me talking to really just one person about it, and that was my shul's rabbi. He was born on the border of Poland and Russia, one of those towns that you'll wake up any morning and you belong to a different country. And during the war, the Soviets came in and drafted all the men of fighting age. And so he spent most of the war in the Russian army. He had a lot of stories about when he was at the Battle of Leningrad and other places. Before that, he had mentioned some of these stories, but it really wasn't until I came to him with this that he started talking in a lot more detail about them. You know, I'd made the decision to enlist, and then I was starting to get cold feet. And so I was looking kind of for a way out. And I figured if I go up to my rabbi, there's no way he's going to tell me that an Orthodox Jew belongs to the military. And I walk in and I explain why I was thinking about joining, why I don't want to, and I asked for his advice. And he told me, not only should you join, but you must. What's his exact words? He was a firm believer that the halacha has to be out in the world. It can't be confined to the study halls and the synagogues. That has to be lived. And that it was important for the world to see that Orthodox Jews exist and that we can exist in society, even in the military. And so he basically said, this is clearly what you're being called to do. Do it. And we spent that summer learning all the halachot and the leniencies that apply to people in the military to prepare me for it. Yeah, so he was really that resource for me.
Among the choices you were considering after high school, what specifically drew you to the Navy as making sense as the next move for you?
This was right after the attacks on September 11th. So there was that big patriotic feeling in the country. And then the Intifada was also going on in Israel at the time. So there was that similar Jewish feeling. And I initially was thinking about Tzahal. But my mom was like, there's Intifada going on. You're not joining Tzahal. So I started looking at other options. And I was at high school. And the military came in one day, the recruiters, to give the aptitude test that everyone has to take before you can enlist. And they happened to be giving it during a period of an English class that I hated. So I took the test to get out of English class. And I scored high on it. And so the recruiters started calling me. So I figured, you know what, I'm going to go there, tell them I'm not interested, and they'll stop calling me. And so I started talking to the Navy guy. And I started talking about all the travel that you can do in the Navy, how they'll pay for college, here are the other benefits, this and that. And knowing that I still wanted to go to college, having it wholly paid for was definitely a huge perk for me. And then, you know, it's a funny joke. They say, join the Navy and see the world. What they don't tell you, 70% of it's water. But no, I got to travel quite a lot in the Navy. That was what got me in the doorway with the Navy. And just the more that I looked into it, the more it just seemed like it was the right choice.
Take us inside the experience of those first few days. Are you wearing your kippah during boot camp or whatever the basic training is going to be? How are the other recruits reacting to you? Are they asking you questions? Is there any anti-Semitism? What is that experience like early on?
At boot camp, I didn't see any direct anti-Semitism. It was more of just genuine curiosity by the recruits. I remember there was a guy in my division who was from like middle of nowhere, Tennessee. I mean, you're talking, you know, a town that has 40 people living in it. He had never seen a Jew before in his entire life. And so one day we're in our like dormitory in the barracks and he's like looking at my head, kind of doing this, doing that. And I ask him, what's going on? He's like, where are your horns?
Oy.
And there was no malice there. It was just sheer ignorance. He grew up thinking that Jews had horns. Obviously, I was able to educate him that's not true. And we stayed friends for a very long time after that.
Let's talk a little bit about the Shabbos experience, because you mentioned you were learning about leniencies and how it's meant to be handled. So compared to an everyday person going through Shabbos, where they just walk to shul and then they go to someone's house for a meal, you're now in the middle of the ocean on this ship and Shabbos is approaching. First of all, how do you know when it is in a moving ship going through time zones? How is the whole process handled for you?
Well, actually, knowing when Shabbos starts is fairly easy. We track the exact moment of one of these sunsets every day. So I could just figure that out, and I would start Shabbos a little bit before that and a little bit after that. And that part was easy. As far as what Shabbos looked like at sea, nothing like a Shabbos does anywhere else. I mean, they would give me time to daven, and I would go to the special room that we had for that. And I would light candles, and I would say Kiddush, and I would have rolls or matzah, whatever bread I had. And I would do a small little meal, and then as soon as the candles were out, I would go back to work. On most of my ships, they were as accommodating as they could be. They would give me jobs that weren't as much in violation of Shabbat as others. So instead of being on a radar console, for example, I'd be with paperwork or a lookout watch or something like that. So they were very open to that. Obviously, in the event of an actual mission requirement, all that went out the window. But that was just the kind of day-to-day Shabbos.
And what about the kosher food? You're in all these different ports around the world. Some places it must be harder or easier to get kosher food. How was that part handled?
Well, there's a group called the Aleph Institute. It's a Chabad group out of Florida that provides for the needs of Jews who are in prison and in the military. because a lot of the challenges that we face are very similar, dealing with governments, supply chains, and red tape, and all this and all that. But on my ships, they would give me like a small locker that I could store these meals to eat in. I could store as many as would fit there. The ship would order them. There'd be no issue there. And beyond that, there was always like fresh fruit, and there's always things like pasta and cereal, and there was always enough food around that I could eat. And then when we visited countries, most of them had a Chabad fairly close by, and so there's always a way to arrange food through them. It was a challenge, but that I could work through.
Were you always the only Orthodox Jew on the ship, or even the only Jew, or did you have people that you could get close to a minion sometimes?
No, I was always on the smaller ships, so I never had that type of hover on the ship. On my first ship, there were about three or four of us, but I was the only Orthodox Jew. And on my other ships, I was the only Jew that cared anything about davening. If we were in port, there would generally be a minion on the base, but it was often not an Orthodox one. When I was stationed in Japan, I would just go to Tokyo to the Chabad house.
Did you ever have a moment, or is there any kind of story where somehow something went wrong with the kosher food allotment and you're put in a situation where you're feeling hungry and you're seeing all this other food and you're thinking, uh-oh, this could get a little dangerous here?
Not something went wrong with the kosher food, but there was a story at a boot camp. I was there over Yom Kippur. There was a reformed chaplain there, but it was the only service that I could go to, so I went to it. But after Nila, he would always bring in pizza to the recruits as a breakfast. And at that point, I hadn't really eaten much real food. Generally, what I could eat wasn't the greatest. And so I've just been fasting for over a day, and I was about to go right back to doing boot camp stuff in an hour. And he brings in this Domino's pizza.
Uh-oh.
And let me tell you, it was the best smelling pizza I've ever smelled in my entire life. I've been in boot camp at this point for about 3 weeks, and so I was really... It was really tempting. And waiting for me back at the barracks, I knew I had like a peanut butter and jelly sandwich. So it wasn't like a gourmet meal or anything. And then so I had to choose that moment. Was I going to eat the Strafe pizza, which was kosher style, and it was cheese pizza? Or was I going to go back to the barracks and eat my sandwich and just move on? Ultimately, I decided to not eat the pizza, go back to the barracks and eat the sandwich. And I think that was the moment that the spiritual conflict in me ended. It was really the first conscious act that I made to say, I'm an Orthodox Jew, I want to be an Orthodox Jew, and I'm willing to make the sacrifices. And had I eaten that pizza, I would not be Orthodox today. Because I was already on that precipice going into the Navy. And I think that once I would have taken that first bite, it would have led me to do more and more and more. As difficult as it was, I think really shaped the rest of my life. And for the chaplain's credit, he was so mortified that he put me in that spot. The next day, he actually pulled me out of my division because he had gone to Skokie and gotten kosher pizza and brought kosher pizza for me. He was a great guy. He was genuinely upset at himself that he did that to me, but he made up for it the next day.
And as you think about this pizza story and you use the word sacrifice to describe what it's like and the commitment that you're making, I'm picturing people who live in a community where they have everything they need, right? Many kosher restaurants, the schools are right there, the shul is right there. And yes, they're committing to living an Orthodox life, but it's much easier when everything is around you. What do you feel like as someone who put yourself intentionally in a situation where you don't have any of those creature comforts that would make it so much easier to live an observant life? How do you compare those two worlds and the kind of environment you can be in when you want to live a certain way?
I mean, obviously, it is night and day. I live in Teaneck now, where I have a dozen kosher restaurants that I can walk to, and more shuls than that. So it was very different than for those 7 years when I was in the Navy. You know, really, I think taking myself out of the community and putting myself in that situation where if I wanted to be Jewish, I would have to fight for it. I couldn't just be like, okay, I'm hungry, let me go to the store and buy some kosher food. It was, okay, I need to figure out what I'm going to be eating for the next 3 months. I need to plan it out now. We're going to be in the Philippines. Okay, how am I going to contact the Chabad of Manila? It really shifts your perspective on it, where every little thing has to be something that you fight for. The damage control guys weren't too happy with the idea of there being open flame on the ship. So I had to fight to get special exemptions that I have my tea lights on Shabbos or my Hanukkah going. Or the captain asking why I wanted to build a tent for a week on the ship. you know, funny story about that. I remember when I was a kid and I was learning the Mishnah Sukkah. I remember going to my dad and asking him, who would ever build a sukkah on a ship? Like, why would anyone do that? And then there I was, building a sukkah on a ship. And then there was the side of fighting that was internal. When you're in a community, you go to shul in part because if you don't, people are going to ask, why weren't you in shul? Are you okay? When it's just you, who cares? If I'm on base in Tokyo and there are no other Jews around, what's stopping me from walking into McDonald's? And so there was a lot of fighting in that aspect to make sure that I stayed on the path that I wanted to be at, that I didn't really deviate too much. It was a constant struggle. And that's ultimately what led to me getting out of the Navy. But it's a very stark contrast between the two worlds.
And you ended up being in the Navy for 7 years, I think you said?
Yes.
So is there a story or two you want to share about a role you played or a place you visited or a situation you got into to just help our listeners get a sense of what it was really like for you?
I was stationed on 3 ships, one out of Seattle, one out of Japan, and one out of Singapore. Each one had its different challenges, but also perks. Like Seattle, I was a 40-minute drive outside of the Jewish community, so I could go into a Jewish community every Shabbos. And I made some really good friends there who I still talk to. In Japan, there were no Jews around the base. There were Jews on base, but I was the only Orthodox Jew. And so I would often go into Tokyo to the Chabad house when I was in port. The subway fare from the base to the Chabad house was 770 yen. The rabbi there got a big kick out of that. I was like, oh, it's meant to be. And then Singapore actually had a surprisingly large Jewish community. They had kosher restaurants, several shuls. It was an amazing thing. I've been to 30 plus countries on 6 continents, mostly in the Pacific and the Persian Gulf and the Indian Ocean. That was where I spent almost all my time. And there were some places like Djibouti, for example, where there was no Jewish infrastructure of any kind. Back then in Dubai, there was the Chabad house, but you really couldn't talk about it. Now it's a much different story, obviously. So it was really eye-opening experiences. Traveling the world really changed my viewpoint on the U.S. and on the world as a whole. And it really put things in a stark contrast.
During those 7 years, did you ever find yourself in danger, a combat situation, anything like that that happened along the way?
Yes, we were. I wasn't on the ground in Iraq or Afghanistan. I wasn't fighting the Taliban. But we exchanged fire with pirates on occasion. And then also with the Iranians on occasion, transiting through the Straits. When they got too close, we'd fire warning shots, and very rarely they would fire back. Those were rarely about hurting each other. They were just about posturing. We didn't want to kill any of them. They didn't want to kill any of us. The pirates were a different story. We were in U.S. warships. They were in small speedboats with AK-47s. So was I in danger? Technically, yes. But was there any real danger of anything bad happening? Not really.
I'm trying to picture one of those moments, like you're saying. Obviously, the odds are stacked in the U.S.'s favor, but there must be a moment of like, wow, this is real. Like, this is real gunfire. There's no guarantees here. So are you thinking those moments like, well, this is what I trained for, and now I'm ready for this, or wow, this is pretty scary?
Well, there's no real thinking about that. It's just the training just kicks in. And so you just do what we trained to do. It's like what's happening now in the Red Sea with the Houthis. That was really what I trained for. My job was shooting down aircraft a lot.
Now, it happens that across the street from me lived a gentleman named Rabbi David Lapp, who unfortunately passed away about a year ago. But he spent his career as a chaplain in the armed forces for 25 or 30 years. And he would tell me stories all the time about how he helped meet the needs of Jews anywhere around the world. He'd be stationed in all these random places. He's giving matzah to this guy. He's helping this person daven, all these things. Did you have a connection to a chaplain along the way while you were in the Navy?
Not really. The Navy only had a few Jewish chaplains, and none of them were Orthodox. So I didn't really rely on them too much until his passing. My childhood rabbi helped me out a lot. Then the Aleph Institute helped me out really the rest of the way. Like, they're the ones who sent me the sukkah that I put up. They would send me matzah every year and a lulav every year. And so there really wasn't much of a need for me to reach out to a chaplain because my needs were being met by the Orthodox community.
And then when you make the decision after the 7 years that you want to move to the next stage of your life, what happens at that point? I'm curious what it's like to return to civilian life. Does a special someone come into your life at that point? And what is that whole transition like?
It was very difficult. And actually, the military has an entire class that you have to go to as you're getting out to help kind of prepare you for civilian life. in the military, everything is very regimented. From when you wake up to when you go to bed, there are different names for everything. Like a wall isn't a wall, it was a bulkhead. A bathroom is called the head. A water fountain is the scuttlebutt. So that was the language, the jargon that we used 24/7. And so now I can easily walk into a store and ask, where's the head? They would have no idea what I was saying. And then there was just going from where you have a clear, defined chain of command. Everyone's responsibilities were very defined. Everyone knew what they were, to suddenly being an environment where that's not the case. And particularly going into the workforce, where in the military, there are certain ways that a supervisor can talk to a subordinate that don't fly in the civilian world. You can say different things. You can raise your voice to a certain level. So that was a big shift. It took me the better part of, I think, the next 3 or 4 years to really kind of get a handle on it. I took my gap year then, actually, after the military, and I traveled around a bit, spent a lot of time here on the East Coast with family and friends. And then I went to college that following fall. So when I started college, I was there for 4 years. That was its own different experience in its own right, being a 25-year-old at college for the first time. It was a very rocky period. I think by the time I finished college, I had figured it out, and I was more or less okay. I think most veterans go through this. At first, you're happy to be out. But then after a while, you start to miss it. We were doing a lot of good work and a lot of cool work. You know, personally, I was involved in missile defense off of Korea, humanitarian relief in the Philippines, and some other places where we know that we made a difference in the world. Having that impact was definitely something that I missed.
And you mentioned going to college. So where did you go? What did you study? And what career path did that lead you to?
I went to Eastern Michigan, which is in a tiny town called Ypsilanti, right outside of Ann Arbor, where the University of Michigan is. So it often gets overshadowed by the big school. I went there and I studied criminal justice. My initial plan was to get a degree in that and then go work for the DOD in a homeland security type of role. But various things happened during college that moved me away from that. And I actually got into working in retail, kind of just part-time little thing. I fell absolutely in love with it. And so I was working in retail for several years. And then it became too difficult being an Orthodox Jew. Companies would hire you saying, oh, it's okay if you don't work Saturday. And 6 months in, they're like, well, they'll start coming in on Saturdays. And after leaving my second company within a very short time frame, because of that, I realized that wasn't a viable field for me. And so I switched to HR. As a store manager, I was doing a lot of HR work anyways, and it was a simple switch over. Then I was working for the DOD, actually, in HR back in Michigan until I got married and came here to the East Coast.
I was just going to say, you have so much of your story that revolves around the state of Michigan. And my sister went to the University of Michigan, by the way, so I've been there many times and been to those football games. So I know all about that world. It didn't make sense as you're telling me all this, how you end up in Teaneck, New Jersey, but I'm guessing the fact that you said you got married maybe has something to do with it?
Yes. Unfortunately, I am divorced now, but my ex had children from her first marriage and was anchored here. So to marry her, I had to move here.
Okay, and so that's where your life is now. You're in Teaneck.
Yes, I am in Teaneck.
And you're doing HR.
Yes.
All right, so we have that in common. I do HR consulting as well. So we'll have to talk offline about our careers. I want to ask you one last question. If you think about our listeners are predominantly people who are thinking about becoming religious or are somewhere along the journey of becoming religious, or maybe they are Orthodox, but they remember when they weren't, what advice would you give to them if they're also interested in the armed forces and they're thinking, this could be a good path for me? Maybe they're in high school now and they're thinking, that's something I'm going to do just like you did. Or maybe they're in a career and they're not thrilled with it and they're thinking, I could change things up and maybe I'll go join the Army or the Navy. What advice would you have as someone who's lived through it?
There are a lot of rabbis out there who specialize in military service and who can really help you on that path and not only becoming more observant, but also doing that in a military life. Unfortunately, in recent times, there are a lot of Jews who are not just in the military, but in an active war zone. And it's not easy, but it is definitely possible to live that life. You should really have one particular rabbi who speaks to you to give you the advice. Because if you go online and you post on a forum, you're going to get 10,000 different answers. Find one who speaks to you, follow them, their recommendations. And that way it'll help things make sense to you. Because there is a pattern to it, as opposed to this rabbi says this, that rabbi says this, but they don't make sense. And so stick to one rabbi. But more importantly, don't be afraid to fight for it. Don't be afraid to ask for things. The military, surprisingly, it's in the regulations, it's very pro-religion. In fact, the military personnel manual has in there that if the mission allows, that they're required to give special liberty for holidays. So don't be afraid to ask for it. The answer will often be yes, even when you thought there was no chance of it being approved. I convinced my ship, let me light candles on board, which is a big no-no. Fire is like this whole different ballgame on a ship. And kind of like going back to that whole pizza story, it can be easy to fall into, oh, well, it's the military. That's just the way it is. And I'll come back to things down the road. Ask for things. Don't compromise until you absolutely have to. And you'll have a great experience.
You know what I love about your story is I interview so many people who talk about the challenges of going from secular life to religious. And what you've shown us is it's not just about becoming observant. It's also how do you maintain it? And how do you stay committed to it? And you, more than anyone I've ever spoken to, put yourself in a situation where it certainly was not easy to live an observant life, and you managed to persevere and come out on the other side of it. So I think you're going to inspire a lot of people today. And I just want to say, Aaron, thank you for joining me today on Saturday to Shabbos.
Thanks a lot.
Saturday to Shabbos is produced by Gary Wallach. Our theme music is by Paul Uden. To learn more about us, please visit tachlismedia.com. That's tachlismedia.com. Tell us what you think about what you've heard, or suggest a story we should know about by emailing shabbos@tachlismedia.com. I'm Jeff Cohen. Thanks for listening. Please check with us often for more stories of inspiring Jewish journeys. Saturday to Shabbos is a Tachlis Media podcast.